Your mics are live.
Okay, good afternoon, everybody. It is 1:31 on Tuesday, October 22nd, 2019. This is an informal hearing, and we actually have two cases, so we're going to do two separate informals. But the first one is on case number PU-18-433. I'm Commissioner Brian Crotchis, joined by Commissioner Randy Chrisman here at the hearing room at the State Capitol, and Commissioner Fedorchuk by telephone. Can you hear us okay, Julie?
I sure can. Can you hear me?
Yes, perfect.
Okay. Excellent.
I don't have any opening comments, Commissioner Chrisman.
Nor do I, thank you.
Commissioner Fedorchuk.
Nor do I.
Okay. This is an informal hearing involving only undisputed facts. If there are any disputed facts, we will close the informal hearing and issue a notice of hearing. The applicant does go first in this type of proceeding, before starting, I'd like our staff to introduce themselves, followed by company representatives. And then just a reminder, the mics will pick up, you know, what we're saying, where they're located, so you don't have to have them terribly close to you. And Jerry, why don't we start with you, and then we'll just go around the table.
Jerry Lynn with staff.
John Shue with staff.
Victor Shook with staff.
Carl Leipitz with Montana Dakota Utilities Council.
Larry Oswald with Montana Dakota Utilities.
Tammy Eberle with Montana Dakota.
Stephanie Bosch with Montana Dakota.
Okay. And do you have anyone on the telephone as well?
We do have one person on the phone, Eric Wentz with American Colloid.
Okay. All right. Welcome, Eric. All right. I'll let you proceed however you would like.
Excellent. Well, thank you, commissioners. We are here seeking approval of an amendment to the American Colloid contract electric service agreement that we have in place. As a little background, as part of the settlement from case number PU-16666, which was the company's most recent general electric rate case, we did file a settlement agreement in that case, and it was approved by this commission on June 16th of 2017. A provision in that settlement agreement required us to come back with our special contract rates, and so we have in looking at updating those contracts. And so this amendment was worked out as a result of that process, and looks to update the rates that were currently governing the parties prior to the amendment. So we did file this amendment with the commission for approval on December 28th of 2018. And that amendment is an amendment to a contract that goes back to 2011. And prior to that 2011 agreement, the American Colloid was taking service under rate 39. That rate was eliminated in like a 2010 case. So that's kind of how we got to where we are. And so again, we're seeking approval of the amendment, and that's just a procedural background. And then I'll let Mr. Oswald dig into the details.
All right.
Don't get caught up on this answer.
Good afternoon, commissioners. A little bit about the American Colloid facility.
Sorry, one more.
One more? There we go.
Thank you.
Now we're caught up on the slides. Just a little bit about the American Colloid facility is located near Gascoyne, North Dakota. They produce and supply bentonite clay products. And Eric Wentz on the phone from American Colloid can probably give you a few more details about what they do at the plant. But American Colloid currently uses about 3.7 million kilowatt hours of electricity annually and an average monthly demand of 950 kW. The customer is served at a rate that's less than rate 38, primarily for customer load and retention at this location. The rate that they are currently paying does provide an offset to fixed costs, and they are on an interruptible rate, so they do provide a demand response resource for us as well. With that, before I maybe go to the key contract terms on the next slide, Eric, maybe you want to chime in and maybe provide the commission with a little update about the Gascoyne facility.
Thank you, Larry, and thank you everyone at the commission for allowing me to take part in your meeting today. Larry mentioned a little bit about our facility. My role quickly is Director of Global Supply Chain and specifically with energy spend management for our major business units. The Gascoyne facility, as Larry mentioned, mines the bentonite clay mineral. This is one of our small smaller money facilities within the American College footprint with about 13 employees. However, it produces a uniquely imported clay for our product lines that sell into the agricultural and metal castings market. So, again, I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today about that facility.
Thank you.
So next I want to...
Larry, this is Julie. Could you repeat what the load is?
Yes. American Colloid uses about 3.7 million kilowatt hours annually, and their average monthly demand is 950 kW.
Okay, thank you.
Welcome. Moving over to the key contract terms, the agreement, the amendment number one to the 2011 agreement provides for a phase in of the rates over 7 years to move them back to the currently effective rate 38. One of the reasons that in working with American Colloid that we're we signed the agreement and proposing a 7-year phase in is to minimize the economic impact to the customer. You know, the current rate that they're on provides about approximately 48% discount over rate 38 today. So it is a big jump for the customer to move on to the full rate. So we're proposing a phase in approach. The riders, currently effective riders, the generation rider, the renewable resource rider, the environmental rider, will all be phased in first as part of the phase-in approach, and then their energy and demand rates, which are less than the current tariff rate 38s, will be phased in on the latter portion of the 7-year phase-in period. And at the end, the customer will be on our currently effective rate 38 demand response rate. The next slide provides a kind of an overview of that phase in on the chart. I know there's several numbers there, but you know, we're kind of in phase two right now, to where, you know, if the amendment was approved by the commission, we would move into phase two rates, which would apply the renewable resource rider. And then on January 1 of 2020, the transmission rider would also apply. And then moving on to phase four, which would take effect January of 2022, the other two remaining riders, the generation rider and the environmental rider, would be applied, as well as an adjustment to their demand and energy rate. And then phase five would be moving closer to rate 38, tariff rate on the energy and demand, still including all riders. And then phase six, moving after phase six would be implemented, would be to full rate 38. So overall, the phase-in kind of levels out a little bit on the increases to the customer to minimize the economic impact to their operations. You know, within the phase two and three, it is almost a 20% increase to the customer there. And then phase four, another 11%, and 5% in phase five, and 5% in phase six to get to that the currently effective rate 38. That concludes. I prepared slides and remarks, and you know, I don't know if Eric has anything he wants to add on some of the impacts. But I open it up for questions or additional comments from Eric.
Thank you, Larry. Just to build on what you talked about, Larry, last year I became introduced to your office and this rate issue that MDU was faced with, and we had extensive conversations, as you know. We worked diligently over a period of time to come up with a solution that as we talked internally, wouldn't damage our business in a short period of time. Our review involved consideration and buy-in all the way up to the CFO and president of the business unit. Like any mining operation, we're very sensitive to abrupt cost changes. The power component of our cost at the Gas Point facility is significant part of our cost stack, and the success of our operation is having stable operational costs And if we do have any increases, trying to layer them in over a period of time. Therefore, that's how we developed the agreement that Larry just described. And it's really a gradual approach towards absorbing about $100,000 per annum of new cost. It was certainly appropriate a year ago for where our business was at, and today all the more so in a climate where our company has really redoubled its efforts to reinforce strict cost control measures across all of our operations, including the Gascoyne plant. So that's really the long and exhaustive type of process that we engaged in to carefully consider what would make sense for us and put before you today.
See, Eric, this is Commissioner Crosius. You said $100,000. Would that be from going from phase one to phase seven? That would be the impact to your business ultimately?
That's correct. If we compared phase seven with phase one on an annual basis, $100,000. I believe it's a little closer maybe to $110,000, but I'm speaking just in general terms.
Yeah, approximately $110,000.
This is Julie Storchak. Can you talk about how many employees you have in your business and how it's grown over the years and what your future looks like, the North Dakota operation?
I can tell you, and again, I need to unfortunately plead ignorance to a certain extent with the history of that operation, and the future is very much like some of our other operations where we expect steady volume growth and some stabilization of our business, but the history is somewhat obscured to me in the sense that we acquired the American Colloid business in 2014. So there's a brief history during which it's been part of our corporation, but I unfortunately don't have all the past operational history of that business prior to that time period. 13 employees, again, it's if you look at our mining operations that stretch out into Wyoming, it's certainly one of the smaller operations, but the reason that it's able to maintain part of our footprint is because all the clay deposits that we currently mine have unique properties that provide some value for us in our product lines and the markets that we serve. So that's, you know, again, without speaking out of turn about the specifics of that operation, that's what I can tell you.
Okay, thank you.
So, this is, go ahead, sorry.
Commissioner Christman.
Eric, this is Randy Christman. Because I'm not familiar with exactly what you do, a lot of other industries, as they're growing, there are other things changing too technologically and things like that, where their electric growth doesn't really grow a lot, or some cases shrink, some cases they grow. But do you expect that your electric use is going to stay kind of consistent too, or are there new efficiency things and stuff that come along that it's actually lowering?
Right. No, that's a good question, and in the business like ours, and it's not as though it doesn't involve any technology, but the mining business is not going to find a breakthrough in technology that's going to change our load profile in the near future. We expect stability there. We don't expect necessarily huge efficiency changes, at least not in the conversations that I've been aware of. So any change to our load would come from any sort of organic growth in our sales and in the current markets that we serve. While we certainly hope that that's going to be the case, no current step changes in any of the conversations that I've been aware of at this point in time. So I think, ordinarily speaking, it's more stability.
Okay, thank you.
Victor?
Yeah, this is Victor Shook with Advocacy Staff. We are not in support of approving this agreement simply due to the time frame. 7 years is... it's just far too long, in our opinion. Something along the lines of 2 to 3 years would be much more appropriate. Looking at the level of discount, as was referenced, 48%. At that level, I can guarantee you they are being subsidized by other customers. We've done a number of data requests, reviewing different things. We don't have the cost of service study to show what the cost is to serve American Colloid, but as I said, at that level of a discount, it is a certainty they are being subsidized. And the size of the load relative to its value to the system, I think, is outweighed by the discount they're receiving.
This is John Hsu. Maybe, Victor, one thing you can clarify. The end result of this contract rate, do you have any concerns with that, or do you think that's appropriate?
The end result of them being on rate 38 on step 7, would be ideal, but step 7 should come far sooner than 2025.
So at the end, when this is fully implemented, that at that point you believe that the rates would be just and reasonable?
Yes.
Okay. You indicated 2 to 3 years.
2 to 3 years, I think, would be a reasonable time frame.
Your preference?
Yes, 2 years would be my preference. 3 years would be what I would consider acceptable.
Victor, another thing to be worth discussing, I think, is the distinction between the rider is coming in as well, as well as the other rates as well.
Certainly. So if you think about how rates are collected and changed, so rider rates are recalculated on an annual basis. And in the case of American Colloid, they have not been paying and will not be paying all of the riders under this proposed method. So all other customers are subject to riders except for American Colloid in this case. So whereas the case of a normal rate, so let's say your demand and energy kind of components, if you increase those rates, the company just makes more of a margin in that situation, whereas a rider rate, it will directly impact how much other customers pay on an annual basis. So on a rider rate, for example, let's say the revenue requirement for a year is $5 million. That's divided over the number of kilowatt hours expected to be sold. Well, American Colloid's kilowatt hours aren't being counted in that, so there are fewer kilowatt hours to divide those costs against, and everyone is responsible, including American Colloid, for those costs. Whereas the base rate, so their basic service charge, their demand components, if we increase those, again, it just goes to MDU's bottom line to increase their return.
Victor, to what extent has the commission generally taken into consideration the economic benefits to an individual customer for setting rates?
Very limited. MDU does actually have an economic development rider, and even that rider provides a minimal discount. I think it's the maximum is $6,000 annually.
Right.
And that's limited to a period of 5 years.
Right.
And that's for new development, whereby this is an agreement that's been around since at least 2011.
Sure. So you would say as we move towards these just and reasonable rates, that 2 to 3 years would be consistent with the commission's sense of gradualism?
Absolutely.
Did you communicate your concerns to the
Yes. So, and that's why, you can kind of see the delay. The company filed in December.
Right.
We were in discussions relatively early on in this year. We expressed we weren't excited about this time period, and I think the company was trying to take steps to renegotiate with American Colloid. Right. And ultimately, we're unsuccessful, so we decided we should put it before the commission. Mm-hmm.
Did you have something, Jack?
Are we now in the point where an informal is no longer the tool for reaching a decision on this?
So we don't have a dispute with the facts. So, There's not a great deal of facts in this case outside of the usage, discounts, things like that. We don't disagree with anything that's been laid out there. What we disagree with is that this will result in just and reasonable rates.
And just to add on to that, this isn't a really the type of issue that's necessarily a legal issue that it requires extensive argument or briefing. It's really more of a policy discussion. And again, it's more of a sense of what is the right amount of gradualism that should be allowed to implement this contract rate is really what we're looking at here today, and that's what we're presenting for the commission.
So I guess I'd need to hear back from MDU and the company on the 3-year proposal that you guys are more comfortable with and what sort of impacts that has or why that isn't being proposed.
Commissioner, this is Tammy Eberle. I guess the main reason is, as Victor has noted, we were attempting to renegotiate the agreement with the customer. The customer feels strongly that this is too big of a leap for them. So we signed the agreement originally. So we're here today standing behind that agreement. That doesn't come to be, we would go back to the customer. We either go to rate 38. We would provide notice under the terms of the agreement, and likely move them to rate 38 after that term note or that notice expires, which is Larry, help me, one year notice. And knowing in the meantime, you know, we would, if we were to, for example, file a case next year, we would reflect this at the rate that is approved, and anything different than that would be our shareholders' cost. So that's kind of what would happen in the event of a decision other than what we have proposed here. But again, as from MDU's perspective, we're not saying 2 to 3 years is not reasonable. However, we're working with our customer and we signed the original December agreement at 7 years.
So that agreement will stand regardless. And if we don't approve it once it hits the 3 years, then the difference between that rate and what were approved will be something that the company absorbs. Is that what you're saying, the shareholders absorb?
No, what I was saying, and Carl can, on a more of a legal contract basis, but we would, if not approved, we would likely give notice to the customer.
So they have an older contract, Commissioner. This is an amendment to the contract that was signed in 2011. So if this is not approved, that goes back into effect, and MDU is saying they would invoke a provision in there whereby they would give the customer notice that agreement is terminating in 1 year.
Okay, but she mentioned something about the shareholders absorbing that cost, and I don't understand where that is.
So if they were to file a rate case, let's say with a 2020 test year, in that test year, they need to make assumptions about revenues. What she is saying is, since the commission has given notice to the company, if they would disapprove this, the commission has thereby given notice to the company, they don't approve of that rate, and thereby rate 38 would be applicable. So the difference between that, what the customer is being charged, and rate 38, the company's shareholders would have to eat that cost in that rate proceeding. So if that discount equals $100,000, that is $100,000 less of cost that will be recovered in that rate case.
But they'll know what the rate is before 2020. So why? I guess I'm having a hard time understanding why they wouldn't calculate what is actually approved.
So The commission doesn't necessarily set this rate. We either approve the contract or we disapprove the contract. If we approve it, then that rate goes into effect that's been laid out by the company. If we deny it, then what's applicable is the rate schedule applicable to that customer, which would be rate 38.
Okay. Then.
And that's what we're saying. Rate 38 versus what the customer is paying now, there's a discount in excess of $100,000 annually.
Okay, and then if it were approved,
if it were
full consideration in a rate case.
Well, if it were, if this were approved, there would be none of that. In a rate case, they would assume whatever that year of the contract provides for income.
But if it were not approved, then the difference is on the company.
Correct.
Do you know offhand if this were broken out over 3 years, would it would we get beyond the subsidization from other rate classes after the second year, or would it be year three or no?
I think that the most important from our perspective is the rider rates, because those, as I've said, have a direct impact on other customers' rates on an annual basis. The sooner they're paying those, the better off other customers are. The other portion of it, meaning the base rate, the energy rate, and the demand rates, those primarily would go to the company. I'm less concerned with how quickly that happens. So if we would implement by year two the rider rates, that would be my preference.
And then under that scenario, you'd be comfortable with the gradualism proposed if the riders are assumed and covered by year two, then you'd be, how long would you be, what gradual increase would you be comfortable with then?
I think just one more year, because, I mean, the majority of the percentage increase is in those riders. So even thinking about gradualism at that point, it's not a whole lot more of a jump once you add in the riders to turn them on to rate 38. So one more year, because the other thought in my mind then is even with that smaller discount that's only applicable to the demand and the energy, I don't know when MDU is going to file their next rate case, and I would like them, this customer, to be on rate 38 by the time that happens.
Okay. Sounds
right. Mr. Chairman, I think there may be a benefit to hearing from American Colloid as well.
Right.
That's on the line.
Yeah, I agree. I have one other question, real quick, and then we can turn to Eric. On phase six, the energy charge is 0.015, but then it drops in phase seven to 0.0125. Why would it go above and then go below?
I didn't set that. I'm assuming the company, trying to phase things in. I don't know if you have a.
I do. When we laid that out, the rate 38 at the time we signed this agreement back in December, actually, I think we signed it in September, filed it in December, rate 38's energy charge was the 1.5 cents.
Oh.
However, since then, I don't know which docket number it was with the
tax
CCGA.
Its rates were reduced, and that brought the current rate 38 now is 1.252 cents per kilowatt hour. So, but the contract was signed before that happened. So,
all right, that makes sense. Eric, can you weigh in on the previous conversation, please?
Sure, I can certainly appreciate the idea that we are at a significant discount to rate 38 and have been for some time. I would hope you just take in consideration the idea that the operation there was not aware of this. I don't believe anyone there, due to the turnover throughout the years, until last year when it was brought to our attention. We did not have any forecast accounting in place for an accelerated type of assumption of these new rates. So what I wanted to do, and really the reason why we wanted to come before the commission with the agreement that we signed with the company last year, was that this was an extensive type of review by our business a year ago to understand in which way we could proceed, get to the just and reasonable rate, but in a way that wouldn't damage the business, specifically at the Gascoigne location. If we were able to withstand and not sustain any damage to the business over a three-year period, then that's how we would have agreed with the company a year ago. So I felt it would be a bit disingenuous for me to not support what we had reviewed extensively a year ago, and I wanted to put that before you today. But I certainly understand the staff comments, and I can appreciate their perspective on it. We've got a unique perspective, knowing our business and knowing that it's a small operation that can absorb new cost in a short period of time without some impact on us or our customers.
Just a point of clarification, if I could. So the Gascoigne facility is relatively small with 13 employees. How many employees does the company itself have?
Across the entire American Colloid Company, I don't know specifically. As part of our corporate profile, we have nearly 3,000 employees worldwide for the parent corporation, Minerals Technologies Incorporated. But for the American Colloid portion of that business, I can't give you a figure, unfortunately. I apologize for that.
Well, that's okay. That kind of, I just wanted to kind of clarify, American Colloid and its parent isn't necessarily a small company. It's just that the operation in North Dakota is relatively small. I just wanted to kind of make that distinction. So thank you.
Eric, in your business, do you deal mostly in, you know, very short-term sales, or do you have contracts signed long periods out in advance?
We have a mixture of both, depending on the markets that we're servicing. Specifically for the clay mineral that is mined, the Gascoigne site and the product lines that it goes into, I don't have exposure to the type of contracts that we sign. But across the American Colloid business, we have a mixture of both short and long-term agreements. It's part of, again, staff had just mentioned, it's actually microcosmic in the sense that as a public corporation, when you drill down into the Gascoigne operation, we manage it very closely. Although we have a consideration for long-term costs, short-term impacts to us do have short-term consequences for the corporation. So although we hope that we can absorb costs over a longer period of time, and in essence, that's why we wanted to put something for 7 years in front of the commission, the idea of a 2 or 3 year type of impact is serious enough to the extent that we wanted to at least show you why we thought that 7 years was merited.
And in your world, when you said there's a combination within the company as a whole of short and long-term contracts, how many months or years do you consider long-term?
Anything over a year, in my experience, given the different parts of the corporation that I have exposure to, anything over a year would be considered to be a longer-term contract. Anything short of that is probably more typical if I had to just generalize it in one way across the corporation.
Okay. Thank you.
Eric, this is John Hsu. And one question I'd have is, if the rates are set to gradually increase up to 3 years, what type of significant impacts do you believe that you would see within the business operations in North Dakota?
It would directly impact the profitability of the operation. This would not be the type of cost increase to the operational profile of the plant that we could pass along to our markets during that period of time. So short-term profitability and help the business specifically for those product lines that depend upon the Gascoigne plant would be impacted. I can't spell out for you any kind of doomsday scenario by any means. I can tell you that in coordination with the people, commercial leaders, finance leaders in our business that understand our markets, that's why that they wanted to layer this in over a period of 7 years where we have a chance to gradually either pass it along to our markets or find ways to offset those increased costs to our operations.
Mm-hmm.
strikes me that there's a big jump between 3 and 7. So what's the magic of 7 years?
I can tell you, and this would be, I think, the company's recollection as well, that we started out with an even longer time frame in mind. Without remembering exactly what it was, I believe we had something along the lines of 10 years in mind, and we sat down with the company and eventually, through a period of discussions, came down to 7. So, believe it or not, this was something more gradual originally that we had in mind so that we could, for the reasons I just mentioned, withstand it in our business.
Eric, when you mentioned 3,000 employees, is that for American Colloid or is that for Minerals Technologies?
That would be for Mineral Technologies Incorporated. The American Colloid piece, unfortunately, I don't have the portion of that approximate 3,000 that is represented by the ACC business. It's information that I can come by, but I don't have it at my fingertips at the moment.
Then a curiosity question. Is the clay at the mine in North Dakota, is that unique to clay found in other parts of the world? Or, I mean, there must be something special about it. I'm just curious.
It certainly is unique, and I'm not a mineralogist by trade, but you can imagine, given the size of that operation versus the size of our operations that we have in Wyoming, which dwarf the Gas Point facility, there's a unique mineralogical component to what we're doing in North Dakota that causes that operation to find a place in our business. So it's important to us. It allows us to do some certain things with certain products for, like I mentioned before, agricultural and metal casting.
All right. Thank you. Staff, do you have any other questions for the company or for Eric?
Well, thank you. I'm good.
Okay. Commissioner Fedorchuk, any more questioning?
Well, I guess I'd still like to hear some more thoughts on the difference between 3 to 7, because I can understand the company's desire to you know, keep the cost as low as possible for as long as possible. Why would you advocate for anything else? But why is 3 impossible?
Pardon, Jack?
I believe that was directed to Zach. Eric, sorry. I apologize.
Eric. I'm sorry. I would tell you that the nature of impossible is not necessarily the way I would describe 3. The way that I've laid it out and the way that we discussed it as a business a year ago, and certainly things can change over that period of time. But if anything, during that period of time, we've gone into a more strict cost control type of environment with some difficulties in some of our end-use markets versus where we were 12 months ago. And because of that, it's a matter of what the business can absorb over a period of time and stay on good, solid footing. I won't tell you that there's any risk of the business going away or anything like that. It was a calculated estimation of what the business could handle over a 7-year period versus a shorter time period, and simply, you know, compressing that cost increase over 36 months as opposed to a longer time period. There's no magic reason for it. It was an estimation of what would allow us to stay healthy, if I can put it generally.
Okay.
So it was essentially moving from, if I'm doing some quick math correctly, $115,000 a year in utility costs, electric costs to $225,000 for the $110,000 increase, assuming the 48% discount and just roughly doubling.
Approximately.
Yeah. That is a big jump. I understand that. So, Mr. Hsu, what is the scenario that we can operate under on this?
I guess one question I would ask the commissioners is there anything else that would be beneficial in making your decision to you that could be provided?
I would like, I think it would help me, at least a part of it, just to know at what point, is it truly at the beginning of year three that they would no longer be subsidized by others? And I know there's some moving parts depending on how you look at the riders.
So I think, as I've said, the riders are the one that have right. the biggest direct impact. The remaining components, I can't tell you with certainty at what point they're no longer being subsidized by other customers because we don't have that cost of service study showing how much it costs to serve. I can just tell you with that level of a discount, it's a certainty that they are
currently.
I don't know what the magic tipping point would be if that's a, are they no longer being subsidized at a 10 or 15% discount? I don't know. That's part of the reason in the other contract cases that we did as of late, as part of our settlements in those cases, we required a cost of service study specific to those customers in the next rate case.
Has that been requested for this, Victor?
If we were at a point where we would be willing to approve it, if we were going to approve a contract that was for a 2 to 3 year time period, I would certainly want that included as well.
How long is this contract? Just like it only till it's up to that rate? That's how long the contract is, right? Up until it gets on rate 38?
Correct.
I believe up through 2025?
Yep, 2025, they go on to rate 38 as it's currently proposed.
I can't think of anything else. Is Jerry in the room?
Yes, he is.
Jerry, can you think of anything else we should be asking to get to a decision on this?
No, I can't, absent the cost of service study.
Jerry, is it accurate to say that based on the information we have, we wouldn't really have any evidence to back up splitting the difference somehow or anything like that? We're basically in a situation of choosing one direction or another. So if either side is nervous about that, if they wanted to alter their position a little bit, it's up to them to work on continued negotiations. Is that accurate?
I think that's correct.
Well, I don't have any other items that I would need. For me, the next step would probably be to set up a work session to talk amongst ourselves after this.
Would it help? So in one of the company slides, they had laid out the year's different rates. For myself, I had kind of calculated something similar, but I actually came up with dollar amounts for monthly and annual costs to the customer.
That would be
and then a discount. I can come up with the rates. A couple of the rates changed a little bit since I did mine, so I would need to update it. But I can Get MDU a copy of that before I submit it to make sure everyone agrees that it's accurate. We can provide that to the commission if it would help, so it would show those actual dollar amounts on a monthly and annual basis. So you can see what level of discount they're truly receiving.
That would be helpful.
Sure.
As long as that isn't problematic and that the other side didn't get a chance to see
it. Well, that's what I'm saying. I will work with Tammy to ensure we both agree that's right, content before I
move that to them.
So how would you characterize that, Victor, as an exhibit?
Rate summary sheet.
Okay. By month?
By month.
Okay.
In actual dollars.
Okay.
Yes.
Or estimated actual dollars.
Yep. Right. Based on their average usage and demand.
Commissioners, this is Tammy, really. Because of the timing, and, you know, I think that would be well to do, because just the time that has transpired since this was entered into, and now this, I mean, we're talking 7 years, but it's really not 7 years anymore, January 1, 2025. So I think it'd be just good for all of us to, you know, we can take into account the new rate, 38 rate, which was different as well. So I think it'd be a good exercise.
We're really looking at about 5 years.
It's really point. Right now today, right. We're down to five.
Okay.
Mr. Wentz, are you still on the line?
I am. I'm sorry. Something happened with my landline. It caused me to get disconnected, so I'm calling you from my mobile phone right now.
Hey, just beyond this case, I just want to thank you for your investment and your interest in North Dakota.
Thank you all for allowing me to join you today.
Okay, anything else that the company would like to add?
Nothing.
Staff? Commissioner Chrisman, Fedorchuk?
I guess I'd just like to point out that contract rates are the exception from regular rates in and of itself. So in normal rates, you're supposed to determine whether it's just and reasonable, and our rates have to be non-discriminatory as well. So in usually doing these contract rates, the commission has determined this is not unjust discrimination, this is just discrimination. However, as you're going forward and you're looking at these exhibits, we'd just like to point out again that this is not a matter of a disagreement with the actual end result of this. It's really just a matter of what's the correct timeline, what's correct, the correct amount of gradualism in order to implement these just and reasonable rates.
Mm-hmm. Okay. No. Good point. Yeah, Julie, did you have anything else I didn't?
I don't.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. The handout, as well as the audio recording of this proceeding, is now considered evidence. Is there any objection? This evidence becoming part of the official record upon which a decision will be reached?
No objection, but I would also like to add, we have that late filed exhibit too, the rate summary sheet in actual dollars by month as well.
All right. Excellent. Company, any objection?
No objections.
Okay. Then the evidence as presented will now become a part of the official record upon which a decision will be made. Are there any other matters for the record? Seeing none, this informal hearing is now closed. Thank you.